Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the game. I'm Russ Cohen. We're joined by Nico Riesgo. Nico, how are you?
Russ Cohen, my man.
First off, before we really get started on this opening day edition, I want to send our condolences to the family of Roy Sievers. He was the first AL Rookie of the Year, but really the first Rookie of the Year because they did it for both leagues in 1949, and he won the Rookie of the Year with the St. Louis Browns. You know, and that's a franchise, obviously, that's no longer. Well, it is. They morphed into another franchise, of course, and yada, yada, yada. But at the end of the day, just want to acknowledge that because it's pretty interesting. I did come out with a book called Baseball's Best Rookies. People can buy it on Amazon.com. Roy's not in it, but a lot of other great rookies. But anyhow, we wanted to acknowledge that. So, Nico, give me an idea of what opening day was like for you as a player.
You know, I never got a chance to play in an official opening day game, but to me, it's sacred. It's something that's sacred. It's something that's special. It starts the year off, and we always see something amazing on opening day, whether it's a home run or a walk off, or something amazing. The most strikeouts ever. You know, some kind of records being broken.
Mm-hmm.
In the game of baseball, it's a sacred day, and it's something that you take, you know, sacred like going to church.
Well, there was a or temple for our Jewish folks, or mosques, or anybody for any other folks out there. But I do want to say that there was a record broken on opening day, which technically to me is on Monday. I don't like the Sunday night business. I don't like the fact that on the field they put opening week now, but up on the scoreboard they put opening day. It is opening day. That's what it is. Major League Baseball shouldn't have taken it away from Cincinnati. They should have always been the first team on the schedule. I can remember so many times being there, and it was great because, like, Cincinnati would have started at 12:30, and, like, the Mets would start at 1. And that was great. And that's the way it used to be for a million years, then they changed it. But Madison Bumgarner did hit two home runs as a pitcher on opening day, and that's never happened.
And he lost. I mean, how do you do that? And you pitch perfect, you five perfect innings, and then he hit two home runs, and you still can't win. I mean, that's the game of baseball. It's so amazing. You just never know.
No, it's true. You don't know. And so that, to me, is an amazing thing. I was at Mets opening day. It was my 29th consecutive. I've probably been to, like, 32, 35, something like that. So, and, you know, I haven't been to every Mets opening day, but as many as I could have been to over the years since they've started. And Noah Syndergaard was everything you'd want Noah Syndergaard to be, and then some. Like, it didn't matter about the weather. It didn't matter that he had a blister. He went 6 strong. He was dominant. Like, this is what an ace is supposed to be. And I know everybody wants to sort of say Matt Harvey's back, so he's the ace. He's really not. And as much as I like Jacob DeGrom, I think Syndergaard has moved ahead of him as ace status, because now the comparisons to Nolan Ryan aren't that crazy. He does throw 99 miles an hour almost every pitch. He barely throws any balls. He barely gets so many swings and misses. It's crazy. And so, you know, what's your thought on Syndergaard? He had a 6-0 win. It was a combined shutout for the Mets on opening day, which I couldn't remember the last time I saw it. But we also want to talk about Atlanta starter Julio Teheran, who also threw 6 shutout innings and was really terrific as well.
Yeah, what a game that was. And I think Thor kind of started things out right with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball to start the game off, and that kind of set the tone for the game. I mean, how do you compete against 98 miles an hour coming at you every single pitch? He has changed the game. Thor is, like, I would say the comparisons to Tom Seaver are real. And Nolan Ryan.
Well, actually,
thing.
I said Nolan Ryan. I wasn't gonna go as lofty as Seaver. I was just going with the heat of Ryan. I don't think he's Seaver in the sense that we have to see the difference. The difference between Ryan and Seaver, and this was always a debate in my neighborhood growing up, right? Nolan Ryan for a very long time was a 500 pitcher. Seaver, even in his first year, was 16-13 on a really lousy team. And if you look up the WAR percentage of that, it's really high because he won a large percentage of their games. At some point, Syndergaard can do that. He's not quite there yet because, for whatever reason, he does still get bitten by the no-run support bug. And if he doesn't win enough games, he's never going to be in that category. You know what I mean? That's going to hurt him a little bit.
Well, he almost got bit by the bug, too. I mean, five innings of scoreless. I mean, the Mets were really – it was kind of scary looking at their offense. You would think they would have been able to pounce their hand. But he did a great job, and he battled with them. And you can't take anything away from the Mets. They finally figured him out, and they were able to get to the bullpen and score the six runs in one inning. It's good to see them break out and score some runs.
Yeah, now your basic curse aside, I wrote an article a couple weeks ago on Sportsology. I stand by it. I think if the Mets get any kind of production out of the catcher position, they could win it all. Like, I think this is the year, and you've never heard me talk about this. You've never heard me say, even when they were in against the Royals, that they were going to beat the Royals, because I didn't think they were going to beat them, but I was hopeful. But I think this is the year where, and look, Steven Matz is out now, and even Seth Lugo, don't know how long he's going to be out, but they still have a load of pitching. They still have six other guys who could really pitch for any length of time and be fine. Now, do they need another left-handed starter? Absolutely, because that's something that Sandy Alderson sort of let go. But as far as being a real contender and being able to win it all, I think they match up with anybody.
They do. They're pitching, like you said. They got Thor, they've got DeGrom, and then I'm really interested to see Gesellman, how he throws this year, because I think he's going to step it up a big time this year.
I'm with you. I think Gesellman is better than Matt Harvey at this point in Harvey's career. People I know think that's crazy, but I don't think they've gotten to see Gesellman enough. Even the other day, he put a couple of guys on in relief, which he never comes out in relief, right? But early in the year, they know they're not going to need a fifth starter, so they used him. And he still came out of the inning unscathed. There were second and third and no out, and he came out of the inning unscathed.
That's a battle. Yeah, he's definitely battle proven, and they're going to need him down the stretch. And I agree with you. They've got a chance this year. I mean, I don't know. Once you get to the playoff, it comes down to managing. And I don't know if Collins, Collins is known to blow some games. And, you know, when you look at Collins versus like a Francona or a Madden.
Oh, I'll be worried. I'll be the first to be worried. Yeah. Don't worry. You're right about that.
Yeah, it comes down to management. I mean, you got the players on the field, but the manager's leading the players, and you got to have a sharp cookie up there.
Yeah. No question. Also, just because you talked about it, Jeremy Hellickson from the Phillies set a record, or actually tied a record. He became the first pitcher to hit a triple on opening day since Erskine Mayer, April 16th, 1918, in Baker Bowl. Now, that was an old field in Philly back in the day where the old Phillies played. Now, the funny thing is Hellickson, after the fact, said he regrets hitting a triple because, just like me when I play softball, I hit very few triples because I could tell when I'm going to hit a double and I could leg it out just enough to get into second every time. When you hit a triple, you've got to really run hard and consistently the whole time, and he said it took his breath away.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'd never see a pitcher hit a triple, but, yeah, he was fired up opening day. Like I said, it's amazing things happen on opening day. And it was good to see him come out and the Phillies get a win. I mean, that's a big win for the Phillies because they said they're going to have a long year trying to beat the Mets this year. So they need every win they can get.
Manny Machado makes a play on his knees. Like, this is just, you know, you see these things on opening day. You see the teams getting announced. Even David Wright got announced, even though we don't know if he's playing or how much he's playing. I think he's just going to be a DH, and he's going to sort of be the Mets' answer to Rusty Staub. But on opening day, he gets to be out there with the team. He took batting practice. All is well. And that's the beauty of it. It's the beauty of it for all of it. Everybody's in it right now, and that's what you have to like about it.
Everybody's in it. That's right. Even the Minnesota Twins. I told you last year, I really liked the Twins, and they came out pounding against one of the pre-reno with Kansas City Royals there, and they look to have a big year. I mean, I'm telling you, they've made some changes on their personnel. They've got some players. They just need a little pitching, and they're going to play some good games.
And, you know, when I say 29 consecutive opening days that I've been to, I mean the Mets home opener. Like, I always consider the home opener opening day. I know opening day baseball, you know, I haven't been to every game on the road. But I know when fans talk about opening day, generally you're talking about your team's home opener. And so opening days will go through, like, I think even the Phillies is April 8th against the Mets. And so, you know, sometimes teams open on the road, right? It happens all the time.
Yeah.
And so opening day gets extended. There's no question about it. But no other sport has anything like it. You know, first day NFL, first day NHL, first day NBA, they don't call it opening day.
There's no big celebration. Yeah, there's no big special thing that happens.
I mean, people are pumped up. You know, people are pumped up. Sometimes they're hanging a banner because you won a championship. But it's still not the same. It's really, if you're listening to this and you've never been to an opening day, you are really missing out. And even though you said you never played in an opening day on the major league level, you certainly had to have done it on a minor league level or in some teams.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely the minor league level.
Yeah.
But there's nothing like the big leagues. They're playing in the big leagues in front of 60,000 fans. And, you know, you got, you know, Tom Brady throwing out the first pitch and Gronkowski, you know, still in the jersey. I mean, they pretty much stole opening day there in Boston. What a great time that was.
Yeah, no question about it. Actually, no, it looks like opening day for the Phillies is Friday the 7th. I thought it was the 8th, and it's against the Nationals. The Mets, actually, that series starts on the 10th. I'll actually be at that game. So they open on Friday, the Phillies. Actually, that's Velasquez and Scherzer.
Speaking of opening day homers, I mean, he got his fifth homer in five opening days. I mean, the left-handed slugger. What's the name? Bryce Harper?
Bryce Harper, yeah.
Yeah,
he always starts
off
with Harper,
one.
You're right. He always starts off fast. He's had some disappointing years, though. Like, this is a year Bryce Harper has to win either win the MVP, win the division from the Mets. They have to do something, or I'm going to say he's overhyped.
Yeah, this will just be a good year for him to prove himself. Last year, he kind of really took a tank and kind of like he was exposed a little bit because the teams threw around him and walked him intentionally. That series he had with the Cubs, like the Cubs would just walk him.
Sure, but that's
going
to happen, right? That happened to every great hitter I've ever seen in my lifetime. I mean, look, Barry Bonds, nobody was ever walked more than him. Go back to Willie Mays, got walked a ton. Hank Aaron used to get walked, but not as much as Mays. I used to see just a lot of, actually, you know, a lot of, I saw Daryl Strawberry get intentionally walked a bit. It happens. Jack Clark, remember, he used to get walked a lot because he used to be the main power source on some of his teams. And so I used to see Jack Clark get intentionally walked a lot. You got to get over that. It happens.
You do. It's a mentality. You can't let it frustrate you. You got to take what they give you.
Yeah, I think that's right. But give me an idea. I mean, you don't see the talent that Bryce Harper has every day. And just give me an idea of what it takes to have that talent and what it takes to put it together, because it seems like he hasn't put it together mentally. It seems like it's the maturity part of his game that we're not seeing yet, and what it takes for that to occur.
Maturity. I think he's still young. I mean, look at his age. He's like, what, 25, and he's got 5 years in the big league. He's still a young kid. When you're looking at most of the team's roster, I mean, you're just basically breaking in as a rookie at age 24, 25 in most cases as a position player. But for someone like Harper to come in the league and just dominate from age like 19 and to do what he's done and accomplish what he's accomplished under the spotlight that he's in, I mean, I think nobody has had the spotlight on him as much as Bryce Harper. And for him to continue to play through that, yeah, he had a challenging year last year, but he came back hard this spring training. He plays hard every game. He swings the bat, and I look forward to a big year from him, and they're going to need it. They lost some of their offense with their third baseman last year and their catcher, Wilson Ramos. They're going to need some offense big time. I mean, Daniel Murphy is not going to be able to carry this team by himself.
No. Now, Bonds has the record for intentional walks in 2004, 120. But there were other things at play. We're not going to get into the whole thing with Bonds. People know. But out of the Bonds era, Willie McCovey, 45 times in 1969. Albert Pujols, 44 times in 2009. Willie McCovey again, 40 in 1970. Pujols again, 38 in 2010. Ryan Howard, 37 in 2006. Sosa, obviously, it's going to be the same thing that we talk about when we talk about Bonds. Adrian Gonzalez, 35 in 2010. Ryan Howard, 35 in 2007. Ted Williams, 33 and 57. John Olerud's an interesting one. 1993, 33 times. Miguel Cabrera, 32 times in 2010. Prince Fielder, 32 times in 2011. Vlad Guerrero, who I think is a Hall of Famer, you probably do too, 32 times in 2002. Kevin Mitchell, 32 times in 1989. George Brett, even George Brett, not a home run hitter, but definitely a clutch hitter, 31 times in 1985. So you want to know a fascinating one? Ishiro, 27 intentional walks in 2002 because he hit everything.
Yeah, runners on scoring position. I mean, you don't want to even give up a run, so you're just going to give up a walk, you know. So just try to avoid the run and try to get somebody to bounce into a double play, the next guy.
Yeah, some other names: Stan Musial, Duke Snyder, Tim Raines, 26 times in 87.
That's
Tim Raines. Now, why
would
you want to
put Tim Raines on? He could still suck it in third and hurt the. Yeah.
That's crazy. That's why I'm pointing it out. He's a leadoff hitter, and even if he wasn't a leadoff hitter, he could steal. Why would you put him on? That doesn't make sense. Now, here's an interesting one. Leo Cardenas, 25 times in 1965. I remember him, but I'll be honest, I remember him later in his career. And so let's look at him in 65, 25 doubles, 11 triples, 11 homers, 57 RBIs, .287 batting average, 21st in MVP. I guess the Reds just weren't that good that year for Leo Cardenas to get all those intentional walks. Or he hit eighth. He probably hit eighth. That's probably what it was. He hit eighth, and why not pitch to the pitcher, right, because he was a good hitter.
That's true. And that
so
could
maybe
be the same for Raines. Raines must have hit eighth a few times as well, but although we know him as a leadoff hitter. But
yeah.
He's not doing that
now
year.
Now, here's a good one. Here's a good one. Howard Johnson, 25 in 1988. Now, that was – the Cardinals probably did half of those when Whitey Herzog would basically x-ray his bat. And so I guarantee you, and I wrote about that in Numbers Don't Lie. That's my New York Mets book if people want to check it out on Amazon. But Hojo wrote the foreword. He talked about that. But 27 times in 88, and he was having an all-world year in 88. That's the reason. Whitey Herzog did a lot of those. You see Jason Giambi, Warren Cromartie. Now, here's another one. Now, Spike Owen has to be because he hit eighth. Has to be.
Exactly. I got a chance to play with Spike Owen, and yes, definitely wasn't because of his power, that's for sure.
Spike Owen in 1989 had 25 intentional walks. Like, to me, that's crazy. But in 89, let's see what the Montreal lineup was like. We know it had to be great, right? You still had Wallach, Raines, Hubie Brooks. It wasn't as great as it once was. Grissom,
Tim
Walker.
Wallach.
It was still
Tim
pretty
Wallach.
Great, though.
Yeah, Wallach was there.
Yeah, so that was a good lineup. Now, here's another fun one. Bill Russell, I don't even have to look. Bill Russell from the Dodgers was not a good hitter. He really wasn't. But the Dodgers were so good.
Eighth hitter.
Yeah, he was the eighth hitter. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the eighth hitter. So, a fun list. Now, how do you feel about the intentional walk just being, hey, you tell the catcher it's an intentional walk, the umpire says, and you tell the umpire, I'm intentionally walking the guy, and he just, points his arm, and the guy goes to first base. You don't throw any pitches anymore. I don't know if it speeds up the game that much, because I don't know how many.
It's going to take a while for the players to get used to it. I mean, it was pointed out that Mike Trout, I guess they walked Pujols, so Mike Trout didn't realize he's on deck. I mean, he was like, what happened here? He was like, you know, he was really shocked. You know, he was expecting to get the four pitches, and then now you have to hurry up and bat because, you know, you don't get to sit around and wait for the four pitches. You got to go up there
right.
and hit.
Right. Now, but here's the thing. There used to be, and again, just as infrequently as there are intentional walks that, and this is why I don't think it speeds up the game that much, more infrequently is the time that someone might get a hit off an intentional walk or there might be a pass ball on an intentional walk. But is it good to take that out of the game? Like, I like baseball because weird things happen in baseball. Now those weird things can't happen.
Yeah, and I think it's more so they're protecting the pitchers and the pitcher's arm and the pitcher's throwing.
Right.
And you know, the pitchers are monitored by, you know, their pitches. And if they got 90 pitches, they could be taken out of the game. But
do you like it or not?
Like,
you didn't answer the question.
I don't like it. I don't like it. No,
okay.
I don't like it. I think it's not baseball. I like the fact that there could be something happen. You know, one of the players
yeah.
swing, gets the ball too close to home plate. He swings and hits a home run on an intentional walk.
Yeah, I just think it's, you know, somebody asked me the other day, what's still so great about baseball? And I said, okay, if I had to point out some of the key things about baseball, the fact that there's no clock is great. Because, like, you know, you go
yeah.
to a hockey game, you pretty much know, yeah, you're never over until that last out. That has clearly been proven time and time and time and time again. So that is a great fact.
And even in the greatest games of the World Series, the final games of the World Series, it's been proven. You're never out until the last out.
They don't try and shorten extra innings and all. So, like, if it's extra innings, it's extra innings. You know, they don't do something like the NHL goes to 3-on-3 overtime, then a shootout in the regular season. They don't do that. It's just it's extra innings. It's free baseball.
They don't put a man on second
goes.
Base to get it to speed it up or start off your runners on second base.
Yeah, we don't want to see that. That would be awful. I know they did it in the World Baseball Classic. Don't do that in a regular season. Don't put two men on. Matter of fact, when that happened, Noah Syndergaard actually put up the tweet that they are thinking about doing this, and he put up the answer, nope, N-O-P-E. That's it. That was his response.
Right. That'd
so even
brutal.
Even as a pitch, well, I mean, I guess as a pitcher, you don't want that because it's really hard to pitch with two men on because then you're going to get a manager who put the next guy is going to bunt, and then he's going to have one out, second and third, and most major league hitters can drive in a run with one out and runners on second and third. That's what I don't like about it.
It's a sacrifice fly, a little ground out, things like that. You're going
right.
to score a run.
Right. So. That I don't like. So it's those kinds of things. And really, there is no other pitcher versus hitter matchup in any other sport. There's nothing else. You know, when a shooter has a breakaway in hockey, it's close. But how often does that happen in a game? Three times? The pitcher-batter battle is an amazing battle because it's a team game, but that is a singular battle that takes place within the team game.
It is, and then it's a battle that every pitch counts because that pitcher he's hitting the corners, he's throwing sliders and change-ups, and he's doing everything he can to keep that hitter off balance, and that hitter's just got to stay in there.
And give me an idea, like, you know, I've faced some live pitching up to, like, you know, 88 miles an hour, nothing faster than that. Live pitching, and I knew in my head I had to think about what was being thrown, and I would look at a pitcher and see what they're throwing, and even in softball, I still do that. I still scout a pitcher, even though it's softball, just to see what a guy's tendencies are. But, like, you know, at a pro level, give me an idea of what that matchup is like when you know you're going to face a guy, and let's say you're up third in that inning, and you're on the bench, you're not even in the on-deck circle, what are you doing?
Well, I've got my helmet on, I've got my gloves on, and I'm in the game. I mean, I'm in every single pitch. Even though I'm not at the plate, basically I'm reading what that pitcher's given to my leadoff hitter because he's going to give you some tendencies. He's going to show you a little bit of what he's going to go after you. The pitcher sometimes gives it away early on. Is he going to be an inside pitcher all day, or is he going to try to throw away from you all day? And those are little key things I look for, inside, outside. Is he trying to get you out high? in the box, because they'll get you two strikes and then come up on you and try to get you to chase that high fastball, which is kind of hard to catch up to.
I like that. I think that's fascinating. It looks like we have our first rainout of the year. The Tigers got rained out. Tigers at White Sox, so that looks like that's a game that's going to be made up in May now.
Yeah, they're getting a lot of weather up in the Midwest. Let's see, the Cardinals, they may get rained out too, so we don't know about that one. It's in the Cubs. But they get a lot of rain up there in the Midwest.
Yeah, so there's that. So that's something where maybe they'll do it on a day off, or maybe they'll have to be a doubleheader. We'll see. I'm not clicking on the link. I'm assuming it won't be a doubleheader because they try not to do that.
Yeah, it was good to see Verlander get some run support and start off the year, especially with his girlfriend. You don't want to make his girlfriend upset, you know. She has a tendency to tweet her thoughts and her feelings about Verlander. Not getting the Cy Young like he should have gotten.
That's all well and good. I don't care about that. What do you think about, we didn't talk about this last show. The Cardinals gave a 3-year extension to Yadier Molina for $55 million. At his age, is that still worth it because what he still can do?
I think that's about – he's got about that much left in the tank. About 3 more years, I think they're trying to make a run within the next 3 years with him to win a World Series. And it looks like they're going after – they're extending a lot of contracts for the Cardinals. They pretty much got their team set. They just got – Piscotty just got an extension there. They got Fowler's going to be there for a few more years. They're trying to lock up as many players as they can. And it looks like the Cardinals, the players, they want to stay a Cardinal. That's one thing when you're with an organization like the Cardinals, a lot of the players want to stay, and that's a good thing.
All right, so the one guy we're going to talk about now with a couple minutes left to go on the show is Aaron Judge. I had a chance to see him. I did a signing up in Binghamton with the Mets a couple of years ago, and I had a chance to see him play, and he's just a massive guy, right? He's 6'7", 282 pounds. Like, this is a big guy. And what do we think he's going to do? Right now, he's got 2 hits and 8 at-bats. He's hitting 250. Doesn't have a homer yet. What do we think he's going to do? Because I watched him, and the biggest problem I noticed was he doesn't have a great pitch recognition. And I think that's going to prevent him from hitting as many homers as you'd like him to hit. And I think that's also going to prevent his average from going over anything like 250. So what's going to be a successful year for Aaron Judge? Is it going to be – does he have to hit 25 homers? Will you settle with 20? What's it going to be?
You know what? I'd settle with 10 home runs if he gave me 100 RBIs. That's what I want. I need 100 RBIs from him. Someone that big, he's got to be able to shorten his swing and adjust. He's got to realize that they're not going to throw him a fastball down the plate. I mean,
okay,
some of the troubles that I saw, I never would get – nobody's going to throw me a pitch down the plate. So it's like when those runners in scoring position, that's when the game changes. Are you going to be swinging for the fences when there's runners in scoring position? No, you got to adjust your swing. Your most important thing is getting that run home. And sometimes you hit a home run to bring it in, but most of the time – it's a line drive, a double, or something like that that's going to drive in those runs. So I'm looking for 100 RBIs and I would say anywhere from 80 runs. So if he can produce 180 runs, that's my guy.
All right. I can understand that. I do want to tell people that this show is sponsored by a company called Quotees, Quotees. They make great T-shirts. I'm wearing the one, a David Wright T-shirt right now that has a great quote from David Wright, and you can get them in a bunch of different places, and they have cool quotes on them. So just want to let people know about that. Nico, you got anything? We're going to be heading out.
My man. No, great show, Russ, and it's going to be a great year. Look forward to it.
All right. That's it for the game, opening day edition. See you next week.
My man.